dentists right now are struggling where corporate is winning is because we don't understand that we have choices and we have to make, we have to live with the choices that we make.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder. Pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the millennial dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
What is up? Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast 2026. Let's go. Hope y'all are doing great. Oh my gosh. I cannot believe it's 2026. I had so much good intention of recording a couple episodes at the end of the year, and then, well, life happened. But seriously, it's great to be back. Exciting episode today. What we're going to dive into is I want to share an experience from one of our mastermind docs. The experience is I came back all excited to care for 2026 last Monday and received a 2-week notice from one of my hygienists. And I kind of want to walk through that scenario, talk about what we're doing, what the challenges are, how do you, because hygienists, I can't even find a hygienist. So that's what we're going to talk about. So stay tuned for that and a little bit of recap on things. But before we get going, Full Arch Express sold out for 3D Dentist until August. So if you're wanting to get into Full Arch, you're ready to make the jump. Get on that now before you miss the next one. We just kicked off Mastermind. It was sold out. Next one starts in July. If you've been really thinking about going, get in now too. I think we're already half full for that. And then a couple other things coming up. If you're like, I'm just ready to start placing implants. If you're like dabbling in implants and you're like, I just want a refresher, our didactic program, which is the same week, it's just the first 3 days minus live surgery, super affordable. I think that there's a deal, like if you buy so many new implants, they give you the didactic course for free. Great opportunity to get PRF training, extraction grafting training, all that stuff. And then shout out to my dad. My dad's advanced bone crafting course in April has, I think, 2 or 3 spots left as well. If you're looking to do lateral windows, sinus bumps, immediate extractions, GBR, all that stuff. So anyways, that's my sales spiel, but we'd love to support you at 3D, obviously. And thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, okay. So 2026, holy cow, we're here. Before we get into this, just recapping a couple things on my end. 2025 was great. Somehow we found a way to hit a record year. I'm blown away, grateful for my team, docs. It was just, yeah, it's crazy. I think one of the cool things that I did that I'm proud of is in October, we were on pace to basically do the same as we did last year. Full transparency, we did 7.6 last year, and I really wanted to get 8. I mean, that's a pretty cool goal. You know, one location, I wanted to get 8 million. And so we set a goal that if we got to 8 million, I would take our entire team to Orlando for the 3D Dentist Growth Summit, which is, I didn't even mention that in my sales pitch earlier, but yeah, 3D Dentist Growth Summit is at Orlando Universal Studios. All the tickets come with a pass to Islands Adventure and Universal Studios. And so I told him if we got there, we'd take the whole team. So yeah, miraculously somehow, I don't even know how we did it. In 2 months, they covered the gap and got ahead, and we ended up doing 8.2. So it's just crazy. And so I tell you that story just because when you get intentional about putting targets in front of your team members, whether it's a global target like that or whether it's a individual targets, people rise to the occasion. And so you really got to take that into account and consider that. You know, my big takeaway there too is that that needs to be on some level of like a timeline. And the reason I say that is you like if I'm like, hey, let's do 8.5 this year, the goal is too far away. It's not going to have any effect. What made that goal like realistic and attainable, I think, too, is that like we were looking at it like on a daily, weekly basis. Like the runway was tight. It was long enough that like it was helpful, but it was short enough that it was top of mind. So I think your goals have to be that. It's always in my negative with this is a total tangent. It's always in the negative, in my opinion, to a quarterly bonus. It's just too far away. Meaning month one of the quarter, people don't really necessarily think about it. I think it has a role in the last 3 weeks, but not up until then. One reason why I like more of a monthly type thing, but I digress. So anyway, Sullivan Dental Partners had a great year. I'm super proud of my dad. My dad got $2 million in production in his, like in his column at 63 years old. So pretty impressive. And he did that while taking a 2.5 week vacation in July, some other vacation, just kind of continuing to show that like, it's cool because his production last year was 2 million. And when I came in 2015, his entire practice was doing 1.4. So it's pretty crazy to see just the growth and things and implementation and whatnot. So those are some wins on my end. Hope it was okay to share those. I'd love to hear some of your wins and whatnot. What went well last year? And what I think was probably just an overall down hard year. Like we worked harder than we probably ever had last year to do that. So in a year where I think there was still uncertainty, financing wasn't great, lots of challenges, we were able to rise to the occasion. So proud of my team for that. Now, I don't want to bore you with that anymore. So thanks for letting me patronize me a little bit with all that. Kind of turning the corner to 2026, I honestly hate this time of year. And I was actually talking to my dad about it earlier, and I actually appreciated his perspective. I was like, it just feels like the turn of a page, and I watched that number go from 8. You know, for some of you, it's you hit 1 million for the first year, 2 million, 3 million, whatever that number is. Like you achieve something that you've never achieved before, and then it rolls back to 0. And I'm like, the mountain gets bigger to climb every year. And that's kind of like, that makes me feel a little bit of pressure and intimidated. And that can be hard to kind of a hard pill to swallow. And, you know, by the time I get through February, I feel like I'm like back on track and whatnot. But it's always, I struggle these first couple of weeks. And so I've tried to come in with the mindset, and that's where I got to give my dad credit, is he said, you just take it a day at a time. You know, you just take it a month at a time, week at a time. And there's no reason to worry about, like, you know, it's that whole, well, how do you eat an elephant, right? No one eats an elephant, but a bite at a time. That's the saying, right? And I think that's a really good reminder is, yeah, let's just conquer today. Let's just conquer this week. And that will come. And this is going to be another tough year for Sullivan Dental Partners. We're going to be having some doctor changes. One of our docs is going to be moving. That's been a real staple for us. She's getting married, moving. We're instigating some team over, meaning like I want to go through some of the pain that's going to take to turn some team over, because I think we got to get to do that to get to the next level or kind of where I want to get to. And so it'll have its own challenges and whatnot. I'm sure yours will. And so, yeah, let's have a great 2026. Now, so the question was, or the comment was, so I came back all excited to kick off 2026 last Monday, and I received a 2-week notice from one of my hygienists. And this individual I've been basically been chasing for the last 2 years to stay at the practice. So it wasn't a total surprise, but it's still unfortunate. She's a great hygienist, but her attitude can be very hot, cold. When I first took over the practice a few years ago, blah, blah, blah. So overall, I'm frustrated to lose a good hygienist, but we'll see some positives in this outcome. Now, most of you are probably like, well, yeah, you should just get rid of the bad culture. But it's harder than that, right? Like, because right now we're still in a relative shortage of like good hygienists or hygienists in general in a lot of areas of the country. And maybe it's not hygiene where you're at, it's front office or it's assistant, but we always deal with like people that bring some value to the table, but then they could potentially bring negativity to the culture. And like, how do I deal with that? And what does that look like? And, you know, and going through the process. So I do not have a lot of hope to even bother putting an ad out at the moment, as I've kept an eye on Indeed ads in my area for the past 2 months. And apparently lots of hygienists were scrolling, interviewing for Christmas break because the ads suddenly doubled. I have, however, signed up with a job fair in March, blah, 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 blah. So the big question is, where do I put these patients? I'll be down to 2 hygienists. I already have an assistant doing 2 half days of 10-year-old and younger hygiene per week. So you probably didn't think this, but the discussion I want to have today is more around scheduling and not around a hygienist. Scheduling and hygiene to a degree, but not around the hygiene problem itself. Because at the end of the day, this is just the reality of the situation is, we're going to run into some sort of issue at some point, whether you lose a hygienist, it's a capacity issue where you've got too much supply of, or excuse me, you don't have enough supply of opportunity to do work, but you have an overwhelming demand for that work, right? So what's happened here is the supply of hygiene has been reduced by 1/3, but the demand for patients were already high to need a hygienist, and now it's even bigger. So what? How do you handle that problem? And I see this across the board, right? That's why I want you to kind of take this as extrapolate this out to how it fits into your situation. When you have too much demand for something, how do you deal with that? And I think the way that we deal with this is where dentists right now are struggling, where corporate is winning, is because we don't understand that we have choices and we have to live with the choices that we make. So I want to walk through kind of what the choices are. So as I've been considering my options, this is what she's saying. A thought I have had in this is quit automatically scheduling patients their 6-month recall. Let's just kind of go through these. So what do y'all think of that? Quit automatically scheduling patients for the 6-month recall. This is a good one. I think this is it's not going to be life changing, but I think it's something we should consider. When you have too much hygiene or too much demand for hygiene, and you can't just add another hygienist either because of space or because of their availability or having them, then you can move away from a 6-month recall. Now, why do we do 6-month recalls in the first place? Because that's what insurance is always paid. I think by and large, that's the reason it's set up that way. So yes, one option is you quit scheduling 6-month recall for people that don't need a 6-month recall. You move people to once a year recall. That could potentially cut down. Again, not like life-changing, but it potentially gets cut some down. The other is you stop scheduling patients for their 6-month recall. We don't want to invite back to the practice. I think this is a great one as well, because we've been, as I like to say at Sullivan Dental Partners, we're patient-centric, but we're family first. There's a lot of patients who, if we didn't invite them back, our family would be happier. And so we've got to start considering that, and this can be a good time to do it. Instead of just automatically focusing on this, oh, I got to reappoint. That's where I think some of these numbers can be misleading, is I would rather drop my reappointment percentage if I know I'm getting rid of people that aren't good for the practice culture and whatnot. So those are two options. Then she says, our hygiene schedule from Monday 4:30 p.m. to Tuesday 8 a.m. looks so drastically different on a day-to-day, and my front team spends their days chasing their tail to fill all the hygiene gaps. I thought, is there a system out there where 1 month before patients are due, they receive an email with a link to schedule their hygiene on a first-come, first-served basis, and or are they encouraged to call to schedule this by email or text? Now, this is interesting, too, because I kind of like the idea of, like, you really start to like free up potential hygiene spots if you don't schedule them out until a certain point, right? Or you make it, they really got to want to be there. Now that's a drastic approach, but it's not a bad idea. I think the problem there is how do you systemize that, right? Like there's not a good way to do that. I don't know of any system out there that does that. So I think that becomes challenging to do as well. I mean, you could set up probably a reminders a month out to text or email people to do online scheduling, but then you could blow up your phones with people trying to call and schedule. I don't know if that's the best way, you know, to do it either. And to me, the core of this is I've got to at some point start to relieve the demand that I can see. And so how do you reduce demand? Well, I'm going to go back to the part that she said about, I already have an assistant doing two half days of 10-year-olds and younger hygiene per week. So what this tells me is we're still allowing more or less everybody to come to the practice. So one thing I would encourage and coach this person on is I would say, are we at a point in our practice where maybe at some point we were a family practice? That's kind of how the practice was built. But at some point, have we evolved beyond that to where the type of dentistry that we offer, the service that we offer, we no longer can do that to the level we need to, unless we decide that we're no longer going to see below a certain age. We more or less move kids off the table. You know, this is one I think people struggle with because it just like pulls on the heartstrings. Like, oh, mom and dad may leave. And it's like, I don't see that as much happening. And I don't think this is an overhaul and that you maybe just turn off the faucet. I think you stop this from happening new, meaning that you set new parameters on who can come in your practice. We started doing this back in our old building because we kind of had to, because we had a capacity issue where we slowly but surely were like, okay, no one before 6, no one before 8. Okay, we'll see people once they have adult dentition, but we're not really going to do dentistry on them. You know, like if they're healthy and clean and we can just get them cleaned and that's it, they can come to mom and dad. But if not, then they need to go to the pediatric dentist and whatnot. And because the whole like resounding important thing to note here is that when you say yes to something, you are saying no to something else. When you say yes to something, you are saying no to something else. I can't repeat that enough or hammer that in enough that we only have so much availability. Now you may say, well, the hygienist is doing Profusier or polishing, so maybe they wouldn't be able to do that, but their time is valuable. Maybe they could be doing other things. Maybe they could doing, I don't love this idea, but I'm just giving perspective. Maybe they do assisted hygiene where they're now getting the records so that we can schedule hygiene tighter for the hygienist. And then this assistant is just doing records, taking photos, doing that kind of thing. So people's time is valuable. So one thing that I would consider doing is that you move your bar up to what you allow into the practice to a level that works with the overall practice philosophy of moving forward. Again, you have choices. I'm just providing choices, but it's one that you should consider, especially because you consider, well, most people with either the, you know, primary dentition or like in between, they don't need a lot of work. If they do need a lot of work, it's not productive work. It's hard work. It's working on kids. Maybe that's your passion. Good for you. But if that's the case, then I would encourage you to build a model that maximizes that aspect of things. So that's something that you consider. The kind of tying into this is now we start to look at, okay, do we need to consider an insurance change? Meaning, are we in network with a lot of insurances? Can we reduce the demand that way? Now, at some point, you may be out of all the insurances, and that doesn't really work. I mean, you can raise fees. You know, one thing to consider is a pre-appointment fee. These are all things that potentially, hopefully, reduce demand. You know, and going back to like the 6-month recall where people are like, you know, because she says, to me, the schedule will look like one thing on Monday afternoon when the day is over, but then it looks different Tuesday morning. What I hear there is we have a confirmation problem. You know, we have a confirmation problem. And so I would want to look at what is our confirmation protocol. And I would encourage this person that if at 48 hours they have not confirmed, that we're taking people off and filling the schedule. Now, what's the worst that happens there, right? So patient shows up and we don't have their spot because we gave it away. And to me, like we've had this happen before. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Jones. We tried multiple times to confirm you. Unfortunately, you didn't confirm. And so your spot was taken by someone else. Here, Mrs. Jones, is all the areas where we texted you and called you and you didn't respond. And yeah, it trains people that they need to confirm their appointments and whatnot. So, because to me, it's silly if I'm going to keep someone on the schedule up until a certain point, knowing they haven't confirmed and knowing there's a high likelihood that they don't show up. And I have these valuable spots. And so this whole supply and demand issue, especially in hygiene, is really about something negative happened. We've lost a hygienist. It's created a problem. I don't want that problem then to me to have to absorb that problem. Unfortunately, it's going to have an impact on everybody. And what I mean by that is, for instance, one thing that could kill a practice like this is if they don't block for new patients, they start cramming all those recare from that third hygienist into those new patient blocks, or they just push out new patients even more and you just basically cut off the lifeblood of the new patient growth. It's the worst thing you could do. So we've got to hold those new patient slots despite the fact that now we have a even larger demand issue for hygiene. And I really think that this is one of those situations that at some point everybody has to deal with, because whether it's someone quits and they leave, whether it's you fire somebody and now you have to wait till you get somebody, or whether you just grow into the building and now you have all the seats are full, but there's still patients coming in, at some point you have to priority schedule. And priority scheduling is probably one of the number one things that has been life-changing to our practice, in that we don't just allow whatever to get on our schedule whenever. We have saved, reserved, prioritized space for specific treatment, and we will hold that space despite all the things that tell us to close the space or all the people that want to get. And so, like, for instance, that could look like a new patient in hygiene. Next Tuesday, we have a new patient in hygiene availability. Mrs. Jones, recare patient calls, we're booked 9 months out. I can't compromise the potential for that new patient to go there because Mrs. Jones is, you know, and move her in. That's hard. That's super hard for the front office. That's super hard in general. But, like, that is the leadership that it takes in priority scheduling to truly hold the line and make progress. We see this on the doctor side all the time, right? Like, you've got to prioritize space and you got to be willing to hold it. I'll give an example today. My dad's day tomorrow is wide open. It's supposed to be a big case. Wide open. Now, you can't do this if you're not driving some level of dentistry there, meaning, like, we're spending money on marketing, so I have to preface that. But consult comes in this morning, first thing, $21,000 case on his schedule tomorrow. That takes unbelievable leadership to leave a day open like that and go into the day before with it could not fill. And then, but the flip side is if he didn't do that, it would get filled with so much just small little crap, dinky things that ultimately have him on a hamster wheel all day that aren't actually even productive. And I'm not advocating that we do this as a day, but I am saying that, like, it's realistic that you hold a 3-hour chunk of time, maybe a 4-hour chunk of time, and that you prioritize these slots on your schedule, even if it's one or two a week. And then you hold them and you live in a little bit of, like, schedule anxiety, in that I'm booked out 3 to 4 weeks or 5 or 6 weeks for most things. But 6 days from now, I have a 3-hour chunk of time that's still on the schedule. Knowing that you're going in and you're diagnosing things that wouldn't fit in that thing that are just going to skip over that spot and go somewhere else. But the intentionality behind it then means that you go into hygiene checks differently, you go into limiteds differently, you're more encouraging to patients to get their dentistry done in fewer visits so that it takes up a chunk of time. And then your team members are intentionally looking for the right treatment to fit in that block versus just putting whatever will get there. My encouragement in these situations is, I go back to Remember the Titans. Maybe not. Maybe it's Lord of the Rings. I don't know. There's this like saying that's hold the line, right? I don't know what it is. But it's like, the idea is that when times get tough, we're going to band together and we're going to hold the line. I don't remember if it was the line of scrimmage. Like, it sounds like kind of like the line of scrimmage in Remember the Titans, you know, like they're like hold the line. But then it also kind of sounds like that in Lord of the Rings, like hold the line. Like the army of the bad guys are, like, coming across and, like, we're going to band together. And when it's the hardest time possible, when the worst things are happening, when it's the moment that most people will give up, we are going to hold the line. We're going to stick to our fundamentals, and we may bend, but we are not going to break. That to me is, like, the examples of true leadership. And I see too many times people in this situation, they just let all their fundamentals go, and it puts them back in the hamster wheel of busyness. And so what I'm advocating in this situation is that you hold the line, that you hold your new patient blocks, despite that I know you could fill them all up super fast with recare, that you maintain the systems in which way you do things. And then I think you got to take a significant internal look at your confirmation process and your reappointment process. I bet if you were to ask hygienists, like, hey, if we could go back 6 months, would you probably have known that if you reappointed that person, there was a high likelihood they would cancel or not show up? I bet you they probably know. But again, the problem is we've ingrained in our people reappointment, reappointment, reappointment. So, gosh, they're going to reappoint somebody just so you don't get mad at them. That conversation could look something like this. All right, Mrs. Jones, we're going to go and get you scheduled for your 6 months. cleaning. Yeah, well, I don't really know exactly what I'll be doing around then. Hey, no problem. Let's just go ahead and get something in the books, and if you need to cancel or change, you can. Like, how about self-sabotage? Like, that's like self-sabotage 101. Let's let the patient know that, like, there's no pressure here. Cancel anytime. It's a really effective strategy to get people to reappoint because there's no accountability, but that also sets up people for this kind of thing. So I think you have to audit your processes a little bit and say, how are we reappointing people? Do we need to be reappointing everybody? How are we confirming these patients? And at what point we realize they're not coming or there's a high likelihood they don't, let's get people on. And therefore, we may have to have some tough conversations with people, but we will train them differently. And I guarantee you they won't let it happen again. So anyways, I hope this was helpful. It just feels good to get back. Man, I missed this. You know, I'm not even going to like promise you guys that I'm going to be better or be different, because that in the past, that just bites my, it's a lie. It's noble. I mean it, but it's a lie. And so 2026, my vision is I'm going to do the best I can. And I will do better if you all will give me feedback. I've told you all this before. I'm a words of affirmation guy. Like, if you will tell me, hey, I appreciate it. If you will tell me, hey, I'd love to hear about this topic, I will be in here on a weekly basis. But I hope all of you have a great start to 2026. Let's make it a great year. Take care of yourself. Love your family. And yeah, let's knock it out of the park. Work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.